We turn now to a discussion about the state of the internet economy. It wasn't that long ago that any company with a bright idea and a web address was considered a winner, earning praise from the press and a steady supply of cash from investors. When the dot-coms went bust amid a flurry of shuttered doors and shattered expectations, a generation of instant millionaires lost their fortunes and their faith in the industry. But now, some market watchers claim they're seeing new signs of life in the world of online business. But are investors ready to return? We want to hear from you. Did you lose a bundle in the dot-com bust, or did you let the internet revolution and its aftermath pass you by? And would you invest in an online company now? Share your story. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK or send us an email to totn@npr.org. Joining us now is George Manis. He is a senior writer for The Street.com. That's an online financial news magazine, and he joins us by phone from his office in New York City. Thanks for being with us, George.
Thank you, Lynn.
Well, are dot-coms really experiencing a comeback, or are they just beginning to recover after hitting bottom?
Well, people have thought they were experiencing a comeback before, but there is, I think, not too much doubt that operationally things are beginning to turn a corner for some of the larger dot-coms. And also, in fact, the stocks themselves have rebounded from lows of last year, although it's really too early to say if these rebounds are forever.
Well, what really defines a comeback in this situation? What are the indications?
Well, they're sort of small. Certain things are like online advertising revenue in the third quarter of last year, finally, after 6 years of quarter after quarter it falling, it finally edged up a little. Online sales at online retailers had a pretty strong holiday season this year, unlike brick and mortar retailers who were just sort of so-so.
Well, let's talk about the companies that are succeeding. Which companies are succeeding, first of all?
They're survivors, they're big companies, and they're companies that, before they ran out of money, looked very, very hard at the bottom line to make sure that they weren't spending too much money on building the market as opposed to actually making money on the bottom line. I think in different areas, the people who are surviving is the biggest fish in that particular area. When you think of online retailers right now, you think of Amazon.com. When you think of online auctioneers, you think of eBay. And I think when you think of online media companies, you think, at least the independent ones, you think of Yahoo. And a lot of others have fallen by the wayside.
And what did they do to survive? What did they do?
As I said, many of them, well, first of all, they were lucky enough to have raised enough money before the financing spigot got completely cut off. They paid attention to costs, and they also fulfilled a real need as opposed to, a fancy, for lack of a better expression.
Well, I'm wondering, you're talking about Amazon, you're talking about eBay, you're talking about Yahoo. These are the big companies, the big names. I mean, I'm just wondering, is what happened to the dot-coms an example of really what happens anytime when a new industry begins? Like, say, when the car industry got started, there were lots and lots of companies, and eventually they weeded down to the successful few. I mean, is this just the same thing happening, a sort of...
I think it is, although, I wasn't around to follow the market back at the turn of the century when the car companies were starting up. But there were a lot of great ideas, there was a lot of money thrown at them, and there was a lot of willingness to spend your money and risk it on new ideas because I think people understood that the Internet was going to change our lives, and it is changing our lives. Unfortunately, what happened was a lot of those companies that people put money into didn't make it. But I think we're sort of what I'm trying to say is like the ice age is thawing, and all the fish and the cockroaches who survived the Ice Age are going to make it.
Well, during the boom years, a lot of business analysts, it seems that they set aside sort of the traditional rules of evaluating a company.
Reporters, too.
And reporters.
I must confess.
But, you know, I mean, in the aftermath of the bust, have analysts and reporters returned to the old values in assessing a company's prospects?
I think so. You know, and hindsight is 20/20, and it would have been great if people were this skeptical at the time. But yes, I think people who are still around say, well, I guess we learned that internet companies can fail. And if, you know, a person who seems extremely bright and has raised, you know, millions or billions of dollars, you know, looks you in the eye and says, this is a can't-lose idea, he may be wrong.
We're talking about the comeback. We're questioning whether there is a real comeback of the dot-com industry. If you'd like to join our discussion, call 1-800-989-8255. And Eric in Jersey City, New Jersey is... Eric, hi. Eric in Jersey City, New Jersey, you there?
Yes, hi.
Hi, go ahead, Eric.
Well, I just wanted to tell you, my wife used to work for a dot-com, and even to this day, we're still benefiting from it. She was an employee, she was giving some stock options, and we are still using them. I really think that one of the main things about dot-coms were is that it's not just the idea, it's the product. You have a really good product, it's going to keep on going, and those are the companies that are still existing.
George? Can you...
I've got nothing, you know, congratulations, first off. And second, I've got nothing to, you know, I can think of nothing to contradict that. I think that this is, I think right now, maybe one day the internet will be an entertainment medium, but right now it's proving to be strongest as a utility medium, as a place to go when you want to get some information or find out where you can get a particular thing that you want. And the companies, you know, like eBay, which is like a huge marketplace that couldn't have existed without the internet, it's incredibly useful for people who are looking for that obscure thing, which they, you know, would never find in their local newspaper classifieds.
Thanks for your call, Eric.
All right, thank you.
Here's an email from Anne in San Francisco. I worked in San Francisco at the height of the dot-com boom, and I reluctantly got involved in investing because I couldn't figure out how anyone was making any money, especially when they were giving away so much for free. I would invest in companies now because they finally wised up and realized you have to charge for services. Also, after seeing the online sales of Christmas 2002, I see there is some financial gain. I guess, George, the question, the inherent question there is, you know, what lessons did the surviving dot-com companies learn from the businesses that failed?
Well, I think they learned, first off, that money, the streets are not paved with gold. They were briefly, and for a while, money was readily available. Now you really have to hoard. They learned, first of all, to hoard their cash. And they learned also, I think, not to be misled by measures other than cash. They learned not that it, you know, buzz is great, but you can't pay the rent with buzz. And page views are great, but if your ad sales force, you know, can't go out and sell an online ad, it's useless.
George Manis is senior writer at thestreet.com, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. If you'd like to join our discussion, give us a call at 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Terry in Overland Park, Kansas. Hi, Terry.
Hi, Lynn.
Go ahead.
I have kind of a twofold story. I had invested in dot-coms and telecom infrastructure during the late 90s, but at the same time, I also started my own company, which is internet-based. Lost a bundle on the investments. One of the companies just completely went out, and as everybody knows, the telecoms are not doing well.
No, they're not.
My company, we started in 1996, have been online ever since, and it looks like this year we're probably going to be able to turn a profit.
Well, that's great. Can I ask what type of service or how you use the internet or what type of service or
sure.
goods you
we're right up there. We're a small publishing company. We've got a couple of print books, but our emphasis has really been delivery via the internet. So we've got some e-books. We just started an online magazine. And we've not ever been really dependent on advertising revenue in the click-through model. We've gone the traditional route of if you're going to have display advertising, we're going to do it as display type stuff.
What do you think was the key to turning a profit?
Probably pretty much the same as everything else. A lot of hard work.
I would also, be so bold as to say I think also a key is very few expenses. One of the problems was a lot of the major media companies really stumbled at a time on the internet. Let's say NBC and ABC had some problems when they first said, well, we're going to launch this portal and we're going to offer these things on the internet. But the cost structures were just so high for the revenue that they could possibly get. It was like using a water cannon to fill up a glass of water.
Because we're small, we didn't have the extra resources to be able to do that in the first place.
A burden and a luxury.
Both. So we were able to keep the costs down at the same time, keeping everything going. And that's, in my thinking, at least right now, that's one of the things that is an advantage for us, that I can go back and I can say, well, we've been doing this since 1996. And a lot of companies, some of the folks that are coming in this new round of, we've now kind of figured out how to make the internet model work so that you're not just putting stuff out there for free and not worrying about the bottom line. And just like you just said, I think that's one of the issues with a lot of companies. Everybody said, yeah, gung-ho, let's go do this, spend a lot of money, and nobody looked at, well, now how are we going to make this back?
Okay. Thanks so much for your call, Terry.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Let me read you an email from Kenneth Carter. He says, unfortunately, even though I tried not to dump money into dot-coms, my 401k has no more money in it than I deposited. All my gains since I started saving significant money since 1992 were wiped out. I think a large part of the lack of growth was due to poor investments in dot-coms by the fund managers. And I'm just wondering, George, if you think 401ks might start reinvesting in dot-coms now.
Oh, I think very carefully.
Mm-hmm.
I think previously we were in a time where it was like, why the heck aren't you investing in a dot-com?
Mm-hmm.
And fund managers, were put in a situation where if they put their money into internet stocks and technology stocks, they would get great returns. And I think they knew as professional investors that it couldn't last forever. On the other hand, they also could lose by who wants to go with a loser who's just sitting out, the internet boom.
Well,
so now I think there's absolutely no pressure on fund managers to get back into tech stocks. And in fact, there's pressure and skepticism from the other direction.
And for individual investors, just briefly, should they be wary?
Individual, investors should always be wary. Henry Blodgett, the analyst at Merrill Lynch, whose research has been under scrutiny, even at the time he was saying that you should take a small portion of your money and put it into the internet.
Okay, thanks so much, George. George Manis covers the internet business for TheStreet.com and online financial news magazine. In Washington, I'm Lynn Neary, NPR News. Mm-hmm.